Timmies and Spikes, we must all arrive at the win condition.
You buy a box, you could open all foil full art lands.
But you've got your favorite, which is, of course, Spike Turn Hand Grinder.
If you don't have any Nahiris and you want them, now is definitely a great time to go and pick them up. Boom! Baron Von Count, human villain.
That's awkward. Could you imagine a Spike Grizzlebrand?
Hello again and welcome back to the Win Condition Podcast, where we talk all things Magic the Gathering. My name is Sean, I'm your host. I'm joined by my co-host Greg. How's it going, Greg?
Doing okay there, guys.
Awesome. Excellent. Well, we have got some fun stuff to talk about today. A little bit of Unstable, as well as listener email. That's right. But before we get into all that, Greg, how has your week been going?
It's been pretty good. Been busy. Not working at work, though. I mean, the holidays are really slow for us.
Speaking of holidays, are you all done with your Christmas shopping?
I guess. I mean, to be honest, I haven't really gone out and bought anything. So.
Okay. All right. Well, my wonderful wife has made sure that all the Christmas shopping was taken care of, I want to say, pretty much in November. So we're pretty much the yin and the yang. I'm kind of the fly by the seat of my pants, easygoing guy, and she's the planner / executor. So we make a good team. But
that works out then. Yeah.
Yeah. You know who else makes a great team? Anybody?
Me and you?
Anybody and Flipside Gaming at flipsidegaming.com, where you can order any singles or sealed Magic product, other gaming products as well. And if your order is over $10 and you use that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps, it'll save you 10% off of your purchase and help us fund our future show giveaways.
Yeah.
All right. So, Greg, we got a brand spanking new set upon us that everyone is excited about.
Dude, so many people are playing it at my local store. It's kind of funny.
It's actually pretty nuts. So why don't we head into the main phase? Greg, there were some people who were a little nervous about the success of Unstable, but I think those people might be eating their words right about now.
Oh my gosh, are they ever. We were all speculating if Unstable was going to hold any value past the first month. I mean, we already saw it when it was first announced, before anybody started open product. Most of the cards, except for like five of them, were 50 cents.
Right.
Or 9 cents. For some of the commons and uncommons. So there was no value at all in any of the cards. The lands was the only thing, which were anywhere from $3 to $6.
Yep, all the value was expected to be soaked up by the lands.
Yeah. And it really did.
Right.
But not in the fashion we were ever expecting.
No. No, not at all. Yeah. And, I mean, like you're saying, beyond the lands, you're not really seeing many cards pulling a serious price tag. I think the most expensive card in the set, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it's the Urza Headmaster Planeswalker.
Like $8, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, most all the other cards, if you're into cubing and you know you don't get the opportunity to draft, don't fret. You could probably go out and pick yourself up a bunch of singles of Unstable for reasonable prices, better than reasonable, actually.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. I mean, The next card was Sword and Dungeon Dragons at $5.
Yep.
And then your lands.
Yeah. Yeah. And funny thing about the land, Greg, I mean, these are absolutely gorgeous, full art, borderless John Avon lands.
Yeah, they are.
And what's even more rare are to get those foil full art John Avon Unstable lands. But there's something else out there, too.
Well, there are definitely some crazy things. So you've got the that Steam Flogger boss.
Right.
Which, as you guys know, fits in the land slot, and it's supposed to be drafted like a normal card. But the crazy thing about this card is the foil version of it. If you were to open a foil version out of Unstable, they are selling online for around $300.
That's insane.
No. I mean, for a card that's $2 out of Planar Chaos solely on the fact that people collect it, that's an insane price jump.
Right. Right. So, I mean, there's a couple factors at play here because, I mean, Unstable is, like we were saying, not the most valuable set when you come to the actual cards, but also, like we were saying, people like cubes. They like to foil out their cubes. So these foils are definitely sought after, but to a point where it's unheard of, like you're saying, Steam Flogger Boss, multiple hundreds of dollars. Foil Very Cryptic Command, one of the versions, again, several hundred dollars.
Yeah.
So there's a couple factors at work here, and unfortunately, I don't really have the time, and I don't think Greg does either, to really break down the hard percentages, but, I mean, let's take into consideration how these sets work and how these foils usually work. So there's 216-ish cards in this set, and that's not far off from a regular set, you know, 200X cards.
Yeah. I think it's normally around, what, 250?
Yeah.
At least modern big sets, like modern sets. The older stuff, there's some definitely outrageous set, like card numbers.
Right, right. So in addition to that, we also were surprised with the printing of multiple versions of cards with varying art, varying power and toughness, varying rules text,
what was the other thing that was varying? I don't remember now.
Converted mana cost?
No, the CMCs all stayed the same. Oh, planeswalker abilities? Yeah, I think it was just flavor text. It's flavor text, abilities, nothing's super types changed, and the mana's all changed. So yeah, it's just rules text, flavor text, and art.
Right. So with a card like Very Cryptic Command, it gets pretty nuts because you already have the first spoiled version, which had the four different modes, and it said, you know, choose two. Well, when you take that and you introduce, is it four other versions
Five.
Of the card?
There were six of them in total.
Okay, so six total versions of this rare card, all of which do different things, one of which has different art.
Well, the one that has different art is really special.
It is. Why don't you tell us why it's special, Greg?
Well, it's mostly special because of the fact that the artist that started working on it never got to finish it because he passed away.
Right.
Sadly. So it got... Not only was it that, they got a playmat for it, too.
Right. Yes, there is a playmat for that. Right.
Yeah.
So what you have here is you have six different versions of a rare card. So this rare card would really only get printed as a foil X number of times in the whole print run. So when you take that and you multiply it by six, well, then the percentages get thrown even more out of whack, and these cards are even harder to find. So, I mean, again, like I said, we don't have the hard numbers, but I think a lot of these foil cards are extremely expensive because they are going to be very, very hard to find and very rare. You know, like I said, Very Cryptic Command. You've got a lot of the commons, like, what was it, Beast and Show. I know that has different art. I can't go through them all right now, but there's
a bunch,
many.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's so many more cards that are in this set than we were originally aware of that, yeah, the foil printings are going to be a lot more rare. So that's my best guess is in terms of, you know, what's contributing to these insanely high price tags for these cards. Is there anything else you can think of that might...
That is it contributing to insane. It's just that it's the rarities. I mean, yeah, you're right. The matter of fact that you can't get many of these cards, you might get one... of these rares, like every thingamajig's got six versions too.
Right.
It's just a matter of getting them.
Right.
And getting the right one.
Yes. And we could be seeing something that I'm going to refer to as the expedition effect, where the week that you began opening Battle for Zendikar, you know, the expedition Scalding Tarns were selling in the like $400 range.
Yeah, they were.
Because it was brand new, you know, they were very, very hard to come by. And then as the printings increased, as they were thrown into the standard showdown packs, they knew that, you know, we were going to be seeing these more and more, the value began to drop. Now, that's not to say that they're going to be putting these foil unstable cards in Saturday showdown packs, but I definitely think we're going to see the price on some of these decline as more and more people draft it. It's been extremely successful. I mean, like you were saying, you heard a lot of people were indulging in the unstable drafting. I just keep hearing story after story of, you know, all these unstable drafts firing off time and time again. Yeah. So hopefully we've got enough product to manage that, because all through this holiday season, I think a lot of people are going to be going to game stores looking to draft unstable.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I was in Target earlier this morning, and they have draft packs sitting on their shelves of unstable.
Yeah. Ready to go.
Ready to
fire off at a moment's notice.
Mm-hmm.
So. Also, there's one other factor about why some of these foil rare cards might be a little harder to come by. There are God boxes, if you haven't heard. And this this is what the God box is kind of in reference to was, I guess back in, you said Journey into Nyx, is that correct?
The first God box, I want to say that sounds about right, Journey into Nyx.
Okay, well, there were God packs.
Yeah.
Where when you open the God pack, every single card in there, it was one of each of the gods from Theros, Born of the Gods, Journey into Nyx. So, you know, one pack had just gold in it, and it was fantastic. Well, what happened here in Unstable, and I'm not sure if this was done as a reaction to people saying that the value of the set wouldn't be that much, there are boxes that every single pack contains a foil full art land. Now, that does ridiculous things for the value of this set. You know, people might say, oh, I'm not going to buy a box. I'm just going to buy singles down the road, build my cube, whatever. But, you know, we're Magic players. We like buying packs. We like buying boxes. So there is that there is that carrot being dangled out in front of you of, oh, hey, you want to buy a box? If you buy a box, you could open all foil full art lands. So, I mean, my gosh. So these lands, these foil lands are ranging anywhere from $50 to $90.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm. $50 to $90 each.
Yeah. So you open a pack, a box of 36 packs times, you know, let's just average that out to 65 or 70. That's a pretty valuable box. I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's really dumb. And with some people, they're saying that they're getting somewhere to around, some of these boxes are opening all the same land. So if it's all islands, it's $90 per pack.
Yeah. I mean. We're talking these boxes could be the most valuable boxes you open ever.
Yeah. So it's just kind of outrageous. I'm dumbfounded, honestly.
Right. Right. Now, it's also to be noted in terms of this being, you know, possibly one of the most valuable boxes you could open. Back in the days of Zendikar, there were the boxes that you could open or the packs that you could open with the priceless treasures in them. And those ones would hold an insanely high value as well. Yes.
Well, yes, because, I mean, you can open Mox and you can open Lotuses. But even having something like that be possible in a pack, you could never guarantee something. I mean, we're seeing these God boxes, what it seems like. Some people are seeing it as one in every six cases. Some people are even going as far to say that they opened a case and it had nothing but foil lands.
Right.
Doing God cases, that's kind of outrageous. I haven't seen any truth to this, but pay $600 and you get $10,000. ish.
I mean, yeah, here, let me just, okay, well, you know what?
All right,
since we deal in facts here at the wind condition, let me pull up my calculator here real quick. If you were to average, what, let's say $70 for those foil lands, times
15,000.
You open a $2,500 box. Boom.
Well, yeah, but if it's one of those cases, if that's truly true, and there are God cases, that's 15,000.
So, I mean, the allure is out there. The allure is what drives us to want to open up these packs. So,
yeah, it does.
If you find yourself in a store and you open up a pack and you pull a foil land, you open up another pack, you pull a foil land, you better shell out and buy the rest of those packs.
Yeah, you should.
Chances are you will not be disappointed. And then also, just circling back to what we were saying before, if there are boxes or cases with nothing but full art lands, then again, that takes away potential printings of other foil rares in the set.
Right.
So, I mean, there's all kinds of metrics, all kinds of factors that will play in here, but ultimately, there are some cards in Unstable that are worth a lot of money and really make this set more than worth buying. So, I mean, you've already got the fun factor of actually drafting them. Greg and I are actually in the process of making some commander decks.
You are.
Well, you've already got it done. but taking advantage of the unsets involved in the commander world.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, if you do take your commander deck to a local game store and it's some sort of an event where there are prizes involved, like Friday Night Magic, I know my local game store will have commander pods of four whenever, you know, Friday Night Magic happens. But it would still just be a general good rule of thumb to say, you know, hey, guys, y'all are playing silver bordered cards, right? Because I am. And, I mean, it's not like they can say, well, no, you can't. But, you know, it's just, it's the season of craziness. So, you know, it's much more fun to have everybody know kind of what's going on than if you were to, you know, say all of a sudden cast better than one, go and grab someone else and they sit down. Now they're your commander teammate. And the whole pod was like, what just happened? So.
Yeah. Yeah. Gosh, the just what could happen is outrageous.
Yeah. And I think that the success of Unstable is just a testament to how creative the development team actually can be at Wizards of the Coast. I mean,
yeah.
this set was years, decade even? Maybe not
13.
A decade.
13.
Yeah. But long, long time in the making. So, but what I hope, I really hope this does not spawn an unset every 2 years.
Yeah, I really don't want to see that.
That will get old very fast. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But
very, very fast. The amount of, God, I just couldn't think about it. It'd be like, yeah, no. Mm-mm.
Yep. So you can shove all the master sets. You can shove all the new sets you want down our throat, but just don't shove unsets down our throat constantly.
I don't know. I want them to slow down on the release of master sets. I mean, we had, what, two this year?
Yeah. Yeah,
it's
and
too much.
I'm sure that there's already people out there thinking, when's the Unmaster set going to come out?
God, please, no.
That hopefully won't happen for like 20 years. But anyway, so Unstable, it's awesome. Go out and play it if you haven't already. The lands are just gorgeous, and you can play them in Commander through January 15th.
Well, so. The lands you can play anytime, but...
Oh, yeah. And that Steam Flogger boss, man. You could throw that into any deck you want.
That's true.
All right. So, let's move on from Unstable. And we got a listener email. So, why don't we go ahead and dive into the mailbag?
Is there a letter for me?
Ooh, there's a letter for you. There's a letter for me, too.
Nice. I like it.
So, what we have here is a gentleman who is participating. Okay, here, you know what? Let's just read it. so we can give everybody an idea. I'll do my best to move quickly so we can get through this here. So Kyle, thank you very much for the email, writes to us, "Hello, gentlemen. I'm looking for some ideas. My local playgroup is having our next all-day Magic event, and they are running a 5-player chaos match. And here are the rules. It's modern format, no infinite combos, no turn one wins, 45-minute time limit for each round. Everyone donates 2 rares to enter. You get your pick of the rares when you eliminate someone. The rest of the rares all go to the final winner. After 45 minutes, the winner of each table is chosen at random. You can buy back in for next round for another 2 rares. 5-person chaos free-for-all at each table." So that's insane. Like, I am all for people coming up with their own formats of ways to play with their friends. This sounds fun. So then he continues. He's thinking about the deck that he's trying to build to play in this event. He's thinking he wants to build some sort of Gutter Snipe / Firebrand Archer deck mixed with a bit of Storm and lots of small 1-mana instants and sorceries. However, he has lots of time. This is the one time of the year that he plays competitively, so he wants to win. Any creative or crazy ideas for something like this? Love the show. It's a great mix of news, lore, and all-around Magic goodness. Thanks, Kyle. Well, Kyle, thank you so much for the email. We really appreciate it, and we appreciate being able to bring you this cast every week and hope it's some form of value to everybody out there who's listening. Mm-hmm. All right, so what we have here is a free-for-all multiplayer format. He wants to run Gutter Snipe, which is a 2/2 goblin for 2 and a red that says whenever you cast an instant or sorcery, Gutter Snipe deals 2 damage to each opponent.
Yeah.
And then he's running Firebrand Archer.
Firebrand Archer says whenever you cast a non-creature spell, it deals 1 damage to each opponent. So okay. This also hits on artifacts.
Right. Right. Or planeswalkers?
I mean, Chandra the Firebrand works pretty good here.
Yeah. Definitely.
How would you like to copy spells? Oh, wait. Was it that one of the thoughts I had? I mean, if you're already going to be in red, I was thinking you could go blue and add in, like, twin casts and wild ricochets and all those fun cards that allows you to recast or copy other people's spells. So you get to use their decks against them.
Right. Right. And, you know, being a multiplayer format with 5 players, you know, why can't I say this card? Grapeshot. Thank you. Grapeshot isn't going to be your form of finisher, because you'll probably be trying to take out as many players as possible, and you can only storm so much with a grapeshot. So, you know, we're not even going to think about grapeshot right now, but what we are going to think about is how to activate these triggers as effectively as possible. So, right off the bat, if we're going to be running a Storm deck, we're probably going to want blue so that we can include cards like Goblin Electromancer and Baral.
Yep. Because, I mean, why not make these spells cheaper while you're doing it?
Exactly. So, I know in our previous episode when we were talking about Modern Storm, just one of those creatures can cause your ritual spells like Desperate Ritual, Paretic Ritual to only cost you 1 mana. Mm-hmm. So if you have one of each of these out, Gutter Sniper, Firebrand Archer, that's 1 mana to get yourself 3 mana and do 3 damage to each opponent, which is pretty huge.
It's pretty good.
Right. Also, we're not really looking to do much in terms of direct damage, but we are going to want to draw cards with efficient, cheap spells.
Yeah.
So one of my first suggestions in the card draw category would be Think Twice from the Innistrad block, because Think Twice is an instant for 1 and a blue, and it just says draw card. But it has Flashback for 1 and a blue. Again, draw card. So if you have your Baral or your Electromancer, you get to play this for 1 and get 2 triggers out of it. So again, if you have your Gutter Snipe and your Archer, you cast your thing twice, that's 3 damage. You flash it back, that's 3 more damage. That's 6 damage to everyone else at the table for 2 blue mana. That seems pretty strong.
I like it. I mean, you could even add on things like, what is it, Talrand?
Yeah.
I mean, like a one or a two of in there, so each time you're getting two twos, it helps out.
Yeah, definitely.
Or of course, Young Pyromancer. Give yourself one ones even cheaper. Going this route, though, if you really want to go with this, Purphoros seems like a good include, too.
Right. Well, and that is definitely another direction you could take it with. But then you run the risk of going... that's not really much of a risk because most of your cards that will produce multiple like token creatures are sorceries. You could definitely double up on that. If you were to run, Purphoros, and then if you were to go that route, you could even grab Impact Tremors. You know, it's kind of the same deal, but with creatures where you're doing that damage to everyone at the table. Let's lay the table out here. You've got your Gutter Snap, your Firebrand Archer, and a Purphoros out, right? And let's say you just cast, it's the Khanza Tarkir sorcery, 1/2 red, put 3/1/1 goblin creature tokens out in the battlefield.
Oh, yeah. I can't think of the name of the card.
Right. But something like that, you're immediately triggering the damage from your Gutter Snipe and your Firebrand Archer, plus you get 6 more damage from those creatures entering the battlefield with Purphoros.
Yeah.
Tack on another 3 if you've got Impact Tremors. That's definitely one way you could take it. Another piece of tech that I was was probably the first card that popped into my mind just because I've been looking for an excuse to run this card since it came out and have been very unsuccessful, but I think you might actually have something here with it. The card's called Twin Flame from, Journey into Nyx.
That sounds about right.
It's 1 red for a sorcery, and it says put a copy of target creature you control onto the battlefield. It gains haste. Exile at the beginning of the next end step. And this card has Strive, so for 2 red, you can add targets to this spell. Now, that is pretty mana-intensive, but if you think about it, if you have just an Electromancer and, let's say, an Archer out on the battlefield, an Electromancer, a Gutter Snipe, and an Archer on the battlefield, you can cast Twin Flame for 1, copying your Gutter Snipe. That spell alone will do the 3 damage to each of your opponents. But now, for the remainder of that turn, you've got 2 Gutter Snipes on the battlefield. That thing twice you want to flash back will do 4 damage to each opponent. So you're going to have an explosive turn here if you're able to copy your Gutter Snipe and possibly your Archer as well. If you're running things like Snapcaster Mage, you could go Twin Flame my Snipe, snap back my Twin Flame, copy my Snipe again. Now every spell's doing 6. So if you're running those cheap cantrips, you're refilling your hand as well as damaging your opponent. I mean, there's a lot of ways that you could take this deck, and we don't want to get you too diluted in what your focus is. We just want to give you ideas of cards that would make this engine go.
Those are the ideas that I was thinking. I mean, taking advantage of your spells seems like a great idea because you're going to cast them anyways. Why not get better value out of them too?
Right. Now, this kind of led me down a tangent of, you're a damage-based deck. What happens when you sit down across the table from... And I know you said no infinite combos, but in a multiplayer game, life total actually becomes a much more important resource. Because if you're fighting against everyone at the table except for maybe 1 or even 2 guys and their deck revolves around them gaining life, well, that could be a problem. Because if they're gaining all this life, Kitchen Finks, obviously if there's no infinite combos, they're not going to be gaining infinite life, but you're going to want to make sure your strategy works, which is why I would also recommend running a card like Skullcrack.
Or how about Rampaging Ferocidon?
That was the next one I was going to mention. Absolutely. Rampaging Ferocidon, as well as making sure they can't gain life, will also have the reverse Purphoros effect, where every creature they put on the battlefield, they take damage.
Well, you do too, but...
That's true. That's true, but we're trying to cast more instants and sorceries here. If you're playing Rampaging Ferocidon, don't play the Purphoros Impact Tremors version. That's just a little too nombo-y there.
It hurts a bit much.
If you're playing against somebody who's playing like, you know, a Purphoros deck, or I'm just trying to think, like, you're going to be sitting at a table with other people who have a mindset of they need to be doing all this stuff to everybody. So if you are concerned about damage, then this, okay. So Greg, I want you to tell us about your idea of splash and black here. What you could gain from this here.
Well, if you splash black, you get to add in things like Tendrils of Agony is not legal. Never mind that one. But things like Whip of Erebos.
What does Whip of Erebos do in this deck, Greg?
Well, it says two generic, two black, legendary enchantment artifact. Creatures you control have lifelink. And then for two generic, two black, tap, as a sorcery, you could turn a creature from your graveyard to the battlefield. So essentially, it makes your Gutter Snipe, your Firebrand Archer, all of them have lifelink. So when they're doing that damage out from you playing non-creature spells and instants and sorceries, you're just gaining that life back, especially if you go like the creature out with Impact Tremors and Purphoros. If Purphoros becomes a creature while you're doing this, sure, gain two life per each player and each creature you put into play. So you put a creature out, you gain eight life if everybody's not dead yet.
Yeah.
It's a big swing. It's a challenging swing, because I mean, it makes you go the long game.
Yeah, because obviously the whip, I believe, is what, two black black
for
here, let me pull it up here.
No, it's two black black.
Two black black. Okay, for legendary enchantment artifact, and then it's two black black again for its ability. So splashing, it would seem kind of hard. But my gosh, giving your creatures lifelink in this type of deck, in this type of situation, seems like it would put you out of reach from any of your opponent's attempts to kill you through damage.
So since you feel this is a hard splash, why not use something like one of the bonds? I think it's Exquisite Bond or Sanguine Bond. One of those two says whenever an opponent is dealt damage, you gain that much life. Exquisite Blood.
Exquisite
I think
blood.
It's Exquisite
right.
Blood.
Okay. Yeah, so, I mean, we're talking, you might be pulling this into a Grixis build. You could even go red-black. But again, these are all just ideas to kind of get the creative juices flowing here. And if you don't want to go black, you could sort of streamline it a little bit more with just using something like Basilisk Collar. Put it directly on your Gutter Snipe, because even one Gutter Snipe at a table of five people, that's going to be eight damage and eight life you gain every time it goes off. Now, the Death Touch is a little irrelevant, so, you know, don't worry too much about that, but we want to keep you alive in time so that you can actually combo off and kill everybody at the table. So, and then for, you know, your cheap cantrips, obviously we talked about Think Twice. You know, you could run your, I mean, Serum Visions is good, but, I mean, it's a sorcery. I mean, it's still good. It's a cantrip. It's going to trigger all your stuff, and it is cheap, so you probably are going to want to run that. Things like...
Harness the Storm.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Gifts Ungiven.
Yeah, and if you're going the Storm route, then you might even want to go with Faithless Looting.
Yeah.
Because... it's cheap. It draws you two cards. It puts two cards in your bin that you can get access to later.
Well, I mean, with, so it's like things like Metamorphose too.
Yeah. Yeah, if you're running the Past in Flames, you know, everything that goes to your graveyard, you can get back with Past in Flames later on. Now, I know you were saying competitive. I know you were saying, you know, that, you want to keep this deck competitive. But... I guess, unfortunately, we don't know what all your opponents are going to be bringing to the table, and we don't really know the meta that well. If people are looking to be aggressive, like if you get those players that want to suicide into somebody and just take somebody out, like an infect player, then you just are going to have to bring your politicking skills to the table, you know? I'm definitely, like I said, I'm going to try to steer clear of the targeted removal with this, like Lightning Bolt or anything like that, but... Yeah, it's interesting. Very, very interesting. I think this format is fascinating. I would love to do something like this with a group of friends when I get time, if possible.
Or a life.
Yeah.
That's, you know, not your kids.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Gosh. Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. So, I mean, and then also, one other last note. If you are in, again, a multiplayer game, extra turns are usually very, very good because it's one of your turns to four other people's turns.
So would you say something like Lighthouse Chronologist would be good?
Well, I'm just saying if you're running things like Baral and Electromancer, yeah. You know, making a time warp cheaper, it would be, you know, in your best interest, especially if you're trying to set up your kill turn and you just need that one extra turn to set yourself up. Not to mention, time warp triggers your gutter snipes. And again, if it's a multiplayer game and it might go long, then this might be exactly what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That's right. Cards like Final Fortune and stuff aren't legal in modern.
No,
dang it.
No, you can't play Final Fortune. Sorry.
But yeah, it's just, again, something that kind of crossed my mind because you're going to have to fight off four people. And if you give yourself extra turns to deal, then that's going to be that much more of an advantage that you have over the entire table. What is that Delve card from Fate Reforged? That gives you an extra turn. Yeah, I'd forget what it's called. Temporal Trespass. So this could kind of give you another out. Obviously, if you're storming and you need your graveyard, you probably wouldn't want to play this. But the fact that you might have the option to take an extra turn for three mana, if you just say, you know, see ya, graveyard. I'm going to do it now. Let's say you have your, you know, two gutter snipes and your archer, two archers, whatever your pleasure. And for three mana, you go, everybody take six or seven. I'm going to take an extra turn, you know, untap, draw my card, and then just cantrip, and you're pretty much winning right there. And if you have a twin flame, that's just gas. So Temporal Trespass might do you well in this situation. And then obviously if you're running things like Twin Cast or Reverberate, that could make things get even nastier. Because Reverberate just seems to be such a good card in this situation, as well as Twin Cast, because you're like, I'll take two extra turns. I'll copy my Twin Flame, make extra copies of my guys. I'll copy my card draw spell, I'll draw extra cards, all the while doing more damage with your creatures that you have out on the battlefield. Now, obviously, if you're playing a big game, people will probably be running board wipes. And I was not too thrilled about the idea of running counter spells in this deck, just because you're going to have to counter like four different decks at a time. So that kind of left me at a loss when dealing with how to handle board wipes. And it's red and blue. I mean,
well, but do you really think people are going to be running a lot of board wipes for a modern chaos? If they're trying to play competitively here, it's not going to be like the old, like a Wild West format of EDH where people do what they want to do. It's people are trying to eliminate other players.
That's true. I just couldn't help but think in the corner of my mind of any corner case scenario that could kind of mess you up because you are relying on your creatures surviving long enough to cast all these spells so that you can combo off, where a board wipe would be pretty tough. I can't imagine too many people will be playing that great amount of targeted removal in this format, but, you know, I could be wrong.
You never know. You never know. It's true.
Never.
But that's just kind of our idea.
Yep. So, wow, Kyle, this sounds amazing. This sounds insane. It sounds wonderful. Let us know how it goes too. We would love to hear the tournament report on these shenanigans and see how it all pans out.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, there is actually one other thing that I wanted to talk about. And I know, Greg, I didn't really go over this with you beforehand, but...
Is it because you remembered it just now?
It is because I remembered it just now. Anytime that we take an opportunity to get a good deal on cards, or if there's something out there that you would advise we take the opportunity to pick up, not necessarily go deep on, like, you know, some serious investing, MTG finance, what have you, but just a little note. I went to the card shop on Tuesday, and I actually my wife hid $30 in my wallet. And when I got there, she was like, oh, yeah, go and just have fun, all this other stuff, you know. And I was like, oh, my gosh, what do I do? What do I do? And, you know, Unstable was out and all this, that, and the other. But I ended up buying a card, just one card with it. And I'm here to tell you that if you are interested or do not have any Nahiri the Harbingers, specifically, I bought a foil one. I would highly, highly recommend getting them now. And here's why. They're at a low, not an all-time low, but they're currently at a low. It just rotated out with the introduction of Ixalan. So not too many people are thinking about, or not as many people are thinking about Nahiri. But in the modern format, Jeskai Control is seeing a resurgence. And Nahiri is definitely a huge player in the Jeskai Control builds. So if you don't have any Nahiris, I would definitely recommend going out and grabbing yourself one, because I believe the next time it would be possible to reprint her would be Modern Masters, like 2021. Because I'm pretty sure the next Modern Masters set we get, they'll do it up through maybe the Theros block.
Maybe,
yeah. Because we did get Return to Ravnica in this last one. So, I mean, the only other sets you really have are, you know, maybe Theros and then Origins? Or no, Origins was after Khans, wasn't it?
Right. Dang.
So, anyway, yeah, Nahiri was very recent. I don't see her popping up in any kind of product whatsoever. I think she's too expensive to be printed in any Commander product. Plus, I think the next Commander product we're going to be getting are the Allied color pairs. So her being white and red kind of prevents her from getting a printing there. But all that being said, I would just recommend, if you don't have any Nahiris and you want them, now is definitely a great time to go and pick them up. So,
sorry, I had a yawn.
I didn't know I was that disinteresting, Greg. I apologize. I'll try to make it more exciting next time.
I've only been up since 6 a.m. Just haven't had enough to eat.
maybe I'll write a rap about my you know, financial advice that I give for people here. Or maybe not.
No. Keep your day job.
All right. Well, we're going to kind of keep it a short episode this week.
Heading
into the holidays. And just, you know, get out there and enjoy your Unstable. You know,
yeah.
Go play some Commander. Go draft. It's going to be around for another month or so. But then I think once Rivals of Ixalan hits, this is going to be heading in the rearview mirror pretty fast.
I think a lot of the cards are going to vanish, yeah.
Yep. Oh. I am so sorry, Greg. I got a little ahead of myself. Did you want to talk legendary creatures?
There's a little bit about legendary creatures out of Unstable. But you've got your favorite, which is, of course, Spike Tournament Grinder.
It really is. I mean, it's not that, it's like I told you before the show, it's not that I like playing the deck that Spike is in that wins on turn one, going, you know, Sol Ring into Spike into combo piece win. It's fun to think about that kind of stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Going back to the old Duels of the Planeswalker puzzles that you can do, and the card pull from here is, you know, it's actually not that vast, because not every card has been banned, you know? So
no.
The fact that you can only grab banned cards from constructed formats does limit it a little bit, but it's fun to think, you know? And let's say you only fetch out two cards from your deck, you know, you're losing 4 life from casting her, you're losing 8 life from the first activation, you're losing another 8 life from that, so you're down 20 life. If you're playing Commander, you're at half your life total. Now, if you can win that turn, I know that's irrelevant, but gosh, that's such a huge chunk of life to be given up for doing that.
I like my idea of the Time Vault Voltaic Key.
Time Vault Voltaic Key, indeed. Seems pretty busted.
Yeah. All right, so anyhow, enough about Spike. You, of course, are building Baron Von Count.
I am building Baron Von Count, yes.
And what's that new tech that you just found out about recently?
Okay, so this is still a little bit in question here because I heard something about, I know I mentioned proliferating the Doom counter, but there's specifics that refer to a counter and a counter. Now let me elaborate. A counter referred to as in like a plus one counter or a fate counter. Those are actual counters that you put on a permanent. The Doom counter represented on Baron Von Count is more literally akin to a life counter, where it would, you know, count from 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. So You would unfortunately not be able to proliferate as it is not a counter. It is a counter.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, that's the best I can do to explain it. Now here's the tech that we were talking about. And because it's in the season of the uncards, I want to bring your attention to a pet card of mine from the original Unglued set. This card is called Giant Fan. For 4 mana, you get an artifact that says tap 2 and tap it. Move target counter from one card to another. If the second card's rules text refers to any type of counters, the moved counter becomes one of those counters. Otherwise, it becomes a plus one counter. It even says, only a villain would unleash a giant fan on anyone. Boom! Baron Von Count, human villain. Guess what?
That's just wrong.
It works. It has to work. I mean, I don't know. I'm going to run it, and if I get a judge call on me on this, then so be it. But, the fact that you can move counters from one permanent to another has always just been something that fascinates me, like moving plus one counters onto planeswalkers, turning them into loyalty counters, or moving them onto a permanent that refers to, a fate counter or anything, any kind of counter out there. That's the kind of card that I could see being actually printed in Black Border. I know they have cards that move counters from one card to another, but none that are legal that change the counter type from what a card refers to from one card to the next. So, I'm going to try to run Giant Fan with my Baron Von Count and see if I can put, extra Doom counters on him. So,
Okay. So then we got Dr. Julius Jumblemorph. He's a legendary creature with all creature types. I don't know what type of deck I'd build this with. I mean, it only does stuff where whenever you play a host, you get to search for an augment creature. The only problem is that if you try to make this your commander, you only get a few hosts and augments that you can play with. So, like, I would always probably be getting the host angel that destroys stuff, and then, like, the land dude that destroys stuff. That way you could destroy stuff when you play a land.
Right.
I don't know. What do you think about it? It's an extremely narrow. It's really good in draft. Otherwise, it's not that great.
No, I think it's good. I think it's definitely worth running out, you know, and who knows? You might surprise yourself. This thing might end up being a little more OP than you think.
Maybe. Then we've got another villain from the Dastardly Doom Guild.
We have Mary O'Kill.
What? You're going out of alphabetical.
Well, it is the Unseries set, so we're going to go out of that. And what Mary O'Kill is for 5 and a hybrid red-black, you get a 5/5 legendary creature, human villain. For 1, a red and a black hybrid, switch a Killbot or Mary O'Kill in your hand with 1 on the battlefield. So, unfortunately, that makes it a little tough to play her as a commander.
There's like 5 killbots.
Yeah. So.
And they all have different names. So they can all be played in Commander.
True. Very true.
Like 4 or 5 of them.
And seeing as she's a red and black Commander, you can't run things like the blue artifact tutors, like those creatures and stuff.
Yeah.
So you would have to use your demonic, vampiric, diabolic tutors to all just go and grab your killbots.
But you also got to remember, she only switches with in your hand. So you right. can't get her out of your command zone. You'd have to bounce her to your hand to do the things.
Right. Right. So if you are able to, let's say, reduce the casting cost of her, reduce the ability cost with something like a, you can't run training grounds, but you can run that, why am I mind blanking here? That stone that reduces ability costs by 1.
I don't know.
Hang on. I'm going to find this. I want to say it's Hearthstone.
Heartstone?
Yes. Heartstone. There you go.
Yeah, it does that for everybody. I mean, sure, it's yep. cute, but I don't think there's a lot of distance here.
No.
It's like, oh, I get to surprise you every once in a while. This seems really good in a cube.
Yeah.
You could switch her out with a Dr. Julius Jumble Morph.
You could.
Because he's a killbot.
Yeah.
Or a Misform Ultimus. But this yeah. is all cubey stuff, not Commander.
Right. Oh, you know what you could do?
Hmm.
Okay, here you go. I got your combo right here.
Wait, would you possibly New Blood her?
That's not what I was mentioning, but what would that do?
I mean, if you were to steal her with New Blood, you get to do it with vampires, but then you don't really get the bouncer, but hey, whatever.
That's true. No, what I was thinking is you run Altar of the Brood and Mana Echoes.
Oh, God.
So you could just get your killbots and then just switch her out, go infinite, make everyone mill. That'll work.
Wow. That's...
We dream big here at the Wind Condition.
That's awkward. Oh, yeah.
Boy.
Yeah.
All right, why don't you take us through the next one, Greg?
Grizilda, Monster Masher. She is a 3 generic black-red legendary creature zombie villain. She's a 4/4. This is essentially Frankenstein's wife. And she says, combined, enchanted, and equipped creatures you control have menace. And then for 3 generic black and a red tap, put 2 target creature cards from graveyards onto the battlefield combined into 1 creature under your control. So yes, that means it gains both names. It gains all creature types. It gains both rules text. It gains both power and toughnesses. Yeah. So if you take like a prime time from Evil Titan, a Sylvan Primordial, it would become a... 13 mana cost, 11-13 with reach and trample.
Wow.
And, of course, it would enter the battlefield and destroy a bunch of stuff and search for 2 lands and put them to play tap. So, yeah, yep. Talk about some crazy stuff, right? It's just busted. And you could do that with something like Spike.
Oh, my gosh. You Griselda Spike in something else. Oh, God. Get me out of here. That's crazy.
Hey. Sadly, it's pay life, because if it wasn't a pay life, you could have done it with Grizzlebrand and then gain life from it. That's some weird stuff there. Could you imagine a Spike Grizzlebrand?
That would be the most powerful creature I think I've ever heard of. I mean, unfortunately, Emrakul's not going to be chilling in the graveyard too long. Oh, but Emrakul can't even be played in Commander. So, yeah,
whoa,
I guess Griselbrand and
whoa,
Spike
this...
would be the nastiest of the nasties that I
you
could think
totally
of.
You can totally do it with Emrakul.
Oh, my
How about Emrakul Ulamog, where you ditch them both from, like, a survival of the fittest, and while they're still in your graveyard in response to the triggers, because the trigger's on the stack, you Griselda them both out, making it a 23-23 flying trample, indestructible, can't be targeted by spells or abilities, Annihilator 10?
That's exactly what it is. See, this is why it's fun to play a little bit of
But remember,
Commander.
You got to have Spike to do it.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Jeez. Oh, my gosh. Well, before we leave the League of Dastardly Doom, I did want to point out, I know I mentioned the one card from my deck, but there were a couple other ones that I was I was pleasantly surprised with finding out that they satisfy quite a few of the numbers here involved in Baron Von Count. Have we mentioned what Baron Von Count does? We did in our Unstable preview episode. That's
we
right.
did. We talked about him. We already know. He kills stuff okay. and players. All right. Destroys players. We didn't talk about the big idea, though.
No, we did not talk about the big idea. That's right. That's some more of this League of Dastardly Doom business. Do you want to? I know you have some experience with the big idea.
I like the big idea because I've got big ideas.
Oh, well, you know, then why don't you tell us what the big tell us about the big idea. What's the big idea, Craig?
It is a 4 generic red Brainiac villain. Yeah, that's right. He's a Brainiac. And what he says is 2 generic hybrid black red. So that's 4. Tap, roll a 6-sided die. Create a number 1/1 red Brainiac creature tokens equal to the result. I mean, that's already great. Then you can tap 3 untapped Brainiacs you control. The next time you would roll a 6-sided die, instead roll 2 6-sided dice and use a total of those results. Now, to make this even better, there's a bunch of Brainiacs in the set, like Inhumaniac and Rage Maniac. So you get to have additional Brainiacs on top of these guys.
Jeez.
And you're in black and red, so you also get to run something like Conspiracy to make all creatures you control Brainiacs. Why not tap and add extra dice? And then you can use Clark's other thumb. So whenever you roll 1 die, you roll 2 dice, and then take 1 of your choice.
And of course, you're running Purphoros in this deck, right?
I mean, why would you not? Impact Tremors too.
Dumb.
Hey, we could add in a black market.
And it's red.
It's red black.
Oh, you're right. Oh, you're right. Look at that ability text. You, savage.
Hey,
that's awesome.
What can I say? I'm a Brainiac.
So. Whew. Okay. So we'll have to look into a commander deck with the big idea sometime soon.
Hey, I got a foil one.
But yeah, what some of these cards do is they bring out cards that we would never, ever in a million years have thought that we would be using. But it makes some cards more useful than I've ever thought possible. So for Baron Von Count, I just want to read a couple cards that... Because when you make the Baron Von Count deck, you want to use cards that have as many of the number 1 through 5 in their casting cost, text box, and power and toughness. So doing a gatherer search to try to find all this stuff was extremely excruciating, but I came up with a couple really cool ones. To start, let's take a look at Serpentine Spike, which is 5 red for a sorcery that has Devoid, so this card has no color. But Serpentine Spike deals 2 damage to target creature, 3 damage to another target creature, and 4 damage to a third target creature. If a creature would die this way, exile it instead. So that satisfies your 2, 3, 4, and 5 numbers for your Baron Von Count. Getting a little sillier, I'm running Jack in the Mox, which is a 0 drop artifact from Unglued, and you tap to roll a 6-sided die. On a 1, there's your 1, sacrifice Jack in the Mox and lose 5 life. And then 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 all refer to a specific color of mana that will... Oh, wait, I can't run this. Dang
nope,
it.
Nope. But you know what you can run in its stead?
What's that?
Urza Science Fair Project.
Can run Urza Science Fair Project. That is correct. Wow. I just played myself. No, but then there's this creature called Duststalker. I never, ever thought I would be using Duststalker in a deck. But for 2, a black and a red, you get an Eldrazi with Devoid and Haste. At the beginning of each end step, if you control no other colorless creatures, return Duststalker to its owner's hand. And it's a 5-3. So while it only has a 2, a 3, and a 5 on it, it will come back to my hand at the end of the turn, allowing me to use it again, so I can knock off that 5. I can knock off a 3 and a 2. Just definitely a multi-purpose card there.
Yeah.
And then Blood Gift Demon. This is a good one. For 3 black, you get a 5-4. And it says it's a demon flying at the beginning of your upkeep. Target player draws a card and loses one life. So 1, 3, 4, and 5 on that one. Just a couple planeswalkers here. Koth of the Hammer costs 2 red. Loyalty abilities are +1, -2, and -5. Starts with a 3 loyalty, and its first ability creates a 4/4 elemental creature. So it has all 1 through 5 on that. Sarkhan the Mad, 3 red. Its abilities are 0, 2, and 4, and it creates a 5/5 dragon creature token. So 2, 3, 4, 5. And then the last little bit of spice that I have here is Possibility Storm. And what Possibility Storm is, it's 3 and 2 red. Here we go. It's an enchantment. Whenever a player casts a spell from his or her hand, that player exiles it, then exiles card from the top of his or her library until he or she exiles a card that shares a card type with it. That player, they may cast that card without paying its mana cost. Then he or she puts all exiled cards with Possibility Storm on the bottom of his or her library in a random order. So what that means is you cast a card, and Baron Von Count's trigger happens on cast. So you cast the spell, then you start looking through, Doom Counter gets moved, you cast another spell. Chances are you'll have a number on that. It gets moved again.
Would you by chance run Sunbird's Evocation then?
That's what I'm going to put in instead of Jack in the Box. Perfect.
Yes, because then every time you cast a spell, you get to cast another spell.
Yep.
And you get to choose it, and it just has to be a lower a CMC of the card you cast or lower.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. As long as it shares that creature type, or I mean the card type, you're good to go. Okay. Well, wow. We've managed to fill out the rest of the episode here. Anything else you wanted to talk about for Unstable?
Nah. I think most of them pretty much talk to themselves, like X and Phoebe and old Buzzbark. So,
right. Maybe when I get my hands on some more Unstable, we can experiment and branch out with some other commanders.
Maybe. Yep. Maybe.
Hey, Greg.
What? Where can you find us?
What's that?
Where can you find us?
Well, what I was going to say first is you can find God boxes of Unstable at Flipside Gaming. When you order products from flipsidegaming.com, you could order that God box of Unstable with all those foil full art lands. But either way, any order that you have over $10, use that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps to save 10% off your purchase, which will help us fund our future show giveaways. Now, Greg, why don't you tell us where we can find you?
You can find me on Twitter at noobslasher2003.
You can find me on Twitter at MTG_Sean. The show is at The Win Condition. We are on Instagram as The Win Condition MTG. You can send us an email at thewincondition@gmail.com. Check out our YouTube page. We got a link up in the show notes. All that being said, Greg, thanks again.
Oh, of course, no problem.
No problem. Talk to y'all next week.
Yes. Alrighty, guys. Bye.